The title of this lecture is The Exchange Fallacy. I'd like to start with a quote by the anthropologist Edward T. Hall. He wrote, "Language is not, as is commonly thought, a system for transferring thoughts as meaning from one brain to another, but a system for organizing information and for releasing thoughts and responses in other organisms. The materials for whatever insights there are in this world exist in incipient form, frequently unformulated, but nevertheless already there in man. One may help to release them in a variety of ways, but it is impossible to plant them in the minds of others." Now, it's kind of a heavy quote, and it's as radical a notion about what communication means as has ever been proposed before. Hall has offered a fascinating definition of language, which couldn't be more applicable to our times. On the course of this lecture, I'll break down exactly what he was talking about. To incorporate this new way of looking at communication, we need to re-examine how we define communication itself. To do this, we need to have a fresh look at the process of interaction. First, we need to clear up one of the biggest misconceptions about communication that there is, namely, the exchange fallacy. The exchange fallacy is the mistaken notion that ideas are things shuttled across space from sender to receiver. Meaning is not a thing which can be exchanged. Ideas are not Chevrolets or candy canes to be sold, bartered, or given away. We cannot exchange ideas. Why? Well, because the giver of an idea still possesses it after having, quote-unquote, given it away. How can that be possible? While it is true that ideas do seem to replicate, right? Information obviously multiplies. Just watch a rumor spread. But the word exchange is inaccurate and misleading. There is a quantitative nature to ideas. When you get the word out, for example, about an upcoming party, the information about the party could be said to diffuse throughout your community. The information multiplies from person to person in a geometric progression. In effect, a positive feedback loop is created, which causes a multiplicative effect. Ideas spread almost like a virus. They multiply themselves through a reproductive splitting. The host retains the original while photocopies spread out into the environment. Well, the odd thing about the flow of communication is that it stays with each person as it spreads. This phenomenon is at the heart of the mystery of communication. What else can you give and keep at the same time? When you talk, you don't lose ideas. Could you imagine if speaking about your vacation would cause you to lose all memory of it? This would be great for therapy. Just talking about your problems would cause them to go away. However, everyone would be afraid to ever say anything good. The problem is that we think of ideas as objects and try to apply the law of physics to them. We tend to think of communication in terms of a post office analogy. Ideas get sent across space from a sender to a receiver. We even think of words as envelopes, which contain the meanings inside. Sounds logical, but it's completely absurd. Meanings are in people, not words, as the general semanticists remind us. The post office analogy looks good on the surface, but it's totally misleading. If it were true, we would lose weight by speaking and gain weight by listening. What would that do to the diet industry? I can see the latest bestseller now, Talk Your Way to a Trimmer Tummy. Well, a better way to think of ideas is to think of them as states of awareness rather than as possessions. You are either aware or not aware. There can be a cobra in my living room, but I won't know it. It's there unless I can look at it or step on it. We may perceive ideas exactly the same way we perceive clouds, kids, and sidewalks. Well, let's look at what happens when there's an accident. Two cars collide at a busy intersection. The two drivers and their passengers experience the accident directly. The information about the accident spreads in concentric circles away from the scene. The cars directly surrounding the two are almost somewhat involved, but from a distance. Wow, look what almost happened to us. The information perceptually spreads out. The cars behind are forced to stop. Traffic slows down in the opposite direction because of rubbernecking. The whole area can become gridlocked. Someone calls the police. If the accident is big enough, the media finds out, sends a camera crew. Trucks and cars with cellular phones call their offices to inform them of the delay. Now look at what's happening here. We are describing the information about the accident as if the information itself had physical form, almost as if the information was like an oil spill. It started at one point where the injuries were and then just leaked out in all directions. Although treating information as if it had a physical substance makes it clearer in our minds, it just isn't true. What is happening is that more and more people are simply becoming aware of the accident. Let's look at processing information. We understand complex subjects better when we make comparisons to the familiar. For example, we could compare communication to eating. Do we process information the same way we eat? Well, we take in food, we chew it up, it absorbs into our systems. We keep what we need and dispose of the rest. Sometimes we eat junk food, like soap operas. Other times we eat at luxurious restaurants, sipping on a good Merlot with a salmon steak, mashed potatoes, and asparagus. All of which might be likened to reading a classic novel. Not only does the quality of our food intake vary in the same manner as the quality of the information we take in, the food metaphor makes sense in other respects. We can be quote-unquote hungry for information. We can overeat, what I call info indigestion, also known as information overload. We can also suffer from malnutrition when we only read romance novels or watch sitcoms, limit our conversations to insipid interchanges about the weather. Good conversations have longer and better menus. Study aids, flashcards, cliff notes, etc. are like vitamins. Going to see a tutor is like being put on a special diet. Writing an essay or preparing a speech is like baking a cake. Following instructions is like following a recipe. Communicating, like eating, is social. But you can also do it by yourself. Well, if a teacher were to be compared to a cook, the act of teaching would mean all the food would disappear by the end of the school day, except, of course, for the student who didn't get it. His plate is still full. The confused student will probably be blamed because he wouldn't eat his meal, probably snacked on junk food before dinner. Maybe the teacher was a bad cook. If we look at learning this way, students who don't learn are just not cleaning their plates. Most would agree the food metaphor works as a way to describe learning. Well, the comparisons seem endless. But wait, you just fell into a giant salad bowl. You've bitten off way more than you can chew. Communication is not really like eating. First of all, a smart person isn't fatter than an ignorant one. Knowledge is not a thing at all. It can't be weighed, cooked, nor even measured in an objective sense. Teachers are not cooks. Two students attend a lecture. One leaves with complete understanding. The other goes away confused without any retention whatsoever. What is the difference? Well, is the confused student empty while the other is full? Did the learner acquire new knowledge or simply confirm something she already knew? If the teacher, quote-unquote, gave away the knowledge, why does the teacher still know it? The problem here is called reification. When we treat a symbol as if it were an object, well, we fall into this trap when we do that. The point is that messages are not things that can be added or subtracted like coins. Speakers do not lose anything, except maybe their reputations, by speaking. It's not logically possible to have something and give it away at the same time. Teachers don't lose the information they impart to their students. One could make an argument for the reverse. The act of speaking increases the speaker's knowledge. After all, the best way to learn is to teach. The line between cause and effect is blurry in communication. In fact, there may not be a line at all. Deborah Tannen once said, "Communication is a continuous stream in which everything is simultaneously a reaction and an instigation. An instigation and a reaction." The problem in defining communication is trying to find an acceptable analogy. The world of printing offers something of an improvement from the post office analogy. If you take a piece of paper and place it over a rough surface, and then rub the pencil across the paper, you will have transferred the image onto the paper. However, this type of image is quite different from the image you would have acquired had you used a printing press. With a traditional printing press, ink is placed on the press and rubs off onto the paper. In a rubbing, ink does not pass from the press to the paper. It's a marvelous metaphor for communication because that is exactly what happens when we talk. When you listen to someone speak, you make an impression of what they're saying. You create your own version of what you hear. The sound waves from the person's voice bounce off your eardrums. They don't actually permeate your system. Even now, as you're reading or listening to this, your eyes are rubbing against the page. The words stay put as you form your own notions of the concept. In conclusion, start thinking of communication as a process of evoking. Even the word educate comes from the Latin educere, which means to draw out. A communicator is a facilitator. Communicators assist each other in the drawing out of information. As Anatole France said, "The whole art of informing is only the art of awakening the natural curiosity of the mind." And this concludes our lecture.